This is GamesAtWork.biz with Phaedra Boinodiris, Michael Martin, and Michael Rowe, your weekly podcast about gaming technology and play. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone, and not the opinions of any organization which we have been, are, or may be affiliated with. This is episode 125, Procedural Worlds. Good morning, good evening, good afternoon. Michael Rowe here on a beautiful cloudy day, kind of chilly, and a little bit of off and on rain. So it's a gorgeous day in beautiful Durham, North Carolina, and excited to be on another show with my co-host and friend, Michael Martin.
Hey there, Michael. Hey there, listening audience. I'm coming to you from a box, basically, because there's no windows in here. So my view of the world is a bright beige-ish, whitish, off-white sort of view. So like it is every day.
Shiny.
Shiny. Boy, do we have some fun things that you found for us, Michael.
Well, yes, we do. We have a whole load of little interesting things that have come out this week. And not all of them have come out this week, but just kind of glomming them together. I know we had a good show last week that you and Phaedra did, and she's traveling again this week, so we'll see what happens. I know you and I are both traveling next week, so yep. We may have a week off in between there. But anyway, so I was catching up on some episodes of Late Night with Stephen Colbert.
Ah.
And they had the lead developer of a game on a while back. I guess it was shortly after E3. Mm-hmm. And the name of the game is No Man's Sky.
No Man's Land. Yeah.
Yeah. And the basic premise of this was a fully procedural universe. And the goal of these guys was to literally create a game that is a universe-sized game with 18 quintillion planets. Okay? So that's a couple.
Say that again. 18 quintillion.
Quintillion.
That's not like cotillion. That's where you learn like which knife to use.
Yes. If you were to go to an individual planet in this game once every second, I think this is the way they described it, our sun would burn out before you visited all the planets.
So there's basically like power-ups and things that we can never find because they're on the 18 millionth, billionth planet in the game hiding behind a rock.
Yeah. No. Well, what's really interesting about this, back in the Project Wookiee days and before, right? Yeah. One of the big things in early immersive game design was to create what's called a procedural world. And you would define certain characteristics, and the world would render at runtime. This basically allows you to create an environment that is unique to the player.
Oh, okay.
And along that same line, there were, you know, dungeon games. Matter of fact, I think the first Diablo, not even Diablo 2. The first Diablo, if you played the online version,
yes,
all the dungeons were procedural generated, right?
Right, right.
So you could always go back in and play the same level over and over and over again.
Yeah.
And while there might be the same monsters, the halls would be different, etc.
Unlike our Star Trek game, our Star Wars game that we're playing right now.
Absolutely. Yes. Absolutely. So the basic idea is these guys were testing out the technology to see how fast they could render a procedural world. And they've gotten to the point where they truly can render it in real time.
Like, it's only rendering the world that you happen to go to. It's not rendering the entire quintillion-sized galaxy, right?
Yeah, see, that's the secret, right?
Yeah.
And the other thing is they said, you know, each pixel in a world has to know just enough information to generate the pixel next to it.
Mm-hmm.
But not the whole world. And so the challenge that you have is if you're building, say, a mountainside and a piece of the mountain has erosion,
right?
but you're coming up on it, so it's in the distance, right? And you have that slowly fade in rendering that occurs in a lot of games as it comes closer and closer.
Yes.
There's more information that you have to understand and tie together and realize at the time of the initial generation. The other thing that's interesting is it's supposed to be a multiplayer game, multiplayer exploration game, but the likelihood
of ever finding anybody,
of ever finding anybody, exactly, of running into another person
is highly unlikely.
Is highly unlikely, and whose world is rendering the same way as it's rendering on yours, seems to be pretty hard. However, it does happen, and the idea is everything is kind of first person, and so you're a space explorer, and you're flying around, and you find a planet in a solar system, and you go down on that planet. Anything that you've seen for the first time and nobody else has seen, you can name it.
Ooh.
And so on the – and you level things up, right?
There's a few items for abuse right there, isn't there?
I know. Well, the when they were doing it with Stephen Colbert, they were naming it like Stevensaurus Rex.
Yes.
Right? And
as he is wont to do. Yes, of course.
Yes, and Colbert Prime was the planet in the solar system, et cetera. Now, there is no release date for this game yet.
And they've been working on it since 2014 or earlier.
And it's only a team of 10 people.
Yeah, they are a very tiny shop is what they said. Yes.
Yes. So if you've ever looked at other large immersive world games, I mean, they have hundreds of developers. World of Warcraft as an example, right? But that's not very procedural. There may be some procedural aspects to it.
Well, Minecraft is very procedural, though, isn't it? You know, you generate a world every time you start Minecraft.
Yeah, but it has a much smaller set of constraints around it.
Sure.
Much larger set of constraints.
And it looks like here that the flora and fauna are extremely dynamic and from all the videos and screenshots and whatnot.
Yeah, so there's looking through one of the videos earlier, there's a whole evolution pattern that they set up. So based off of the landscape that gets generated, it applies certain values and characteristics to the generation of the flora, the fauna, if there's water, the fish, depending on how long, quote unquote, the planet exists,
the
level of technology that's there, the atmosphere,
sun, temperatures, all that
kind
of good
stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's really neat.
I thought it's interesting. I've got a feeling it'll do a lot like Spore did.
Yeah. Well, that's it was reminding me of Spore. It was reminding me of Smack too, a little bit.
Yeah. Where there's all this excitement, the game finally comes out. Everybody plays it for like a week, and then they're like, "Yeah, that's interesting."
Well, I mean, the problem is that with it being as big as it is, there's got to be either a way for the game itself to create the serendipitous encounters.
There's so much that kind of goes into these types of games, and the idea is when they were looking at and describing it, they don't really have anything other than exploration, right? Exploration and leveling up, you know, the number of planets you name, the number of fauna that you name on a planet, blah, 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 blah.
Right.
And so the challenge that you get is, if you remember, and I use this a lot because I really like the work that Raph Koster did on this, the different types of players. Exploration, achievements, you know, battle, cooperative, etc. This only has one of those aspects. So I really think it'll be neat to test out.
Well, there's some battle aspects to it, though, aren't there? I mean,
they shoot up an asteroid as they land on the planet.
Okay, but it does say in some of the descriptions about how, you know, you're one person in a fragile spacesuit and a fragile spacecraft, and you have to fight your way here, there, and the other. And there's probably – you encounter animals or whatever that may want to rip your spaceship apart. And you have – I'm assuming you have to go and mine – maybe there's a Minecraft aspect to this.
There are certain elements that you need to collect.
Yeah, so there's the collection stuff. You know, maybe there's the whole griefer, you know, fight against other, you know, PvP kind of structure. I mean, you're right. It doesn't really say exactly how it's going to, you know, play out. But I imagine based on the descriptions here, you're going to get multiple kinds of players in here. And you might get some of those players too, Michael, that like the well, this is the Explorer, but like the discovery aspect and the whole naming aspect, because that kind of in some ways clicks right into Foursquare and Waze and some of those kind of things where because you were there first or more frequently or whatever, you kind of can own things. So there may be an aspect of that that comes into play too.
Yeah. Like I said, I think it has a really cool potential. I just worry about execution.
Yeah, well, games like this are really hard, but if done well, they turn into a Minecraft.
Yeah. So that was the first thing I saw.
Yep.
And I thought it was kind of interesting, especially with the whole idea of business processes. And if you think about the whole adoption and growth around cognitive technology, which is more than just, you know, looking at data and gaining an insight, right? That's called analytics. But cognitive is having a model of what you believe a state will be, collecting data to compare against that model, and then validating that model and adjusting the model based off of the input that you get. And if they take that angle in this game, imagine that same kind of cognitive model from a business perspective with what we're doing with the Internet of Things and the large adoption of analytics in business and optimizations, et cetera. So I think there's a business angle here.
And there absolutely is, and the economic angle is going to be important too, because if this is based upon discovering, collecting, quote-unquote, rare resources in order to upgrade your ship and do more things into the game, you'll have those aspects too. And if the algorithms are smart enough here, you are crafting an economy, potentially a machine learning economy here, that will dynamically adjust so that if someone happens to find the unobtainium mine on unobtainium 3, they might not be able to take over the entire game. Or maybe they will, and that's part of the game. Who knows?
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see. So the second thing that I saw, I was actually we've got an internal Slack channel for the design community at IBM. Uh-huh. And, there's one kind of a random channel that talks about interesting design things that people see. And I saw a Kickstarter come across there for Project Solo.
Not Sulu, because that would be the Star Trek thing.
Yeah, the accent of the people at the company developing this call it Solo, which I can think of, sitting solo by yourself playing with your computer. It's beautifully designed little puck, maybe, 5-6 centimeters, maybe 8 centimeters on the side. Yep. 5 inches, something like that. Kind of like the size of the Apple TV. I guess now I can say the old one or the current one, unless the new one's out. anyway, the basic idea of this...
Yeah,
this
new one's almost out. It's not out yet, though, is it?
It might be by the time people listen to this. The basic idea is it's a full-blown computer in this puck with a wooden back and sides, and the top is a glass panel, and it has a screen in that glass panel, and you can touch the screen and manipulate the interface, and it has this kind of interesting interface in the sense that it reminds me of I don't even know how to describe it, kind of like a tag cloud. Or a graph where you select nodes on a spherical graph and you drill down in that graph to open up a project or pop into a text document or pull up a music procedure and listen to some audio or whatever. And so from that way, it's not much more than an iPod Touch, right? However... the basic design of this UI and piece of hardware is it also has Bluetooth capabilities for a keyboard and a HDMI plug on the side that allows you to use an external monitor and a power plug. So the basic idea is you have this full-blown computer, as they call it, in your pocket, And when you get to a location, you can plug it up to a mouse, to a keyboard and a display, and you have your computer with you. And the display becomes then a touch panel, right? Kind of your mouse, your trackpad.
The reality is it's not so much a computer, right? The reality is that this device is a storage location with a bit-o processing that really is a touchscreen interface communicating back with a server somewhere in the cloud to allow for interaction, data storage, retrieval, manipulation, and so on and so forth. It's a battery, a touchscreen, and probably to some degree an authentication mechanism into cloud cloud compute.
Similar to the Google Chromebooks, they do claim the ability for you to work on this without an internet connection. So they do claim that is a offline device also.
I see.
But the basic idea, I mean, you hit it, is kind of a cloud device where you're paying a monthly service for your compute power. And their premise is this is groundbreaking. No one has ever done this before. And my thought was, and maybe it's just, you know, being around in the industry as long as you and I have, I remember this same idea in 1995. You and I talked about it back in, 2001, 2002?
With some examples. Well, we actually had some, we saw some prototypes,
You have things like the iPod Touch with AirPlay, where you could throw it up on a big screen and Bluetooth, and you have a keyboard attached to it.
Yep.
So the basic concept to me is not a revolutionary new idea of computing. What's neat is the UI that they've developed. That's what I find kind of interesting. And if that UI were dynamically generated based off of the content that you have and the data around it to build a graph of your projects, allowing you to say, okay, you know, think of it as different facets of your workload, and you kind of spin it to one angle and you're now looking at financial projects, and spin it another way, you're looking at code that you're working on, and you go to the intersection of the two, and it's code that you're working on for a financial project. That might be interesting.
And if you could use some of the colors and other things like that, that would be pretty awesome too, wouldn't it? To signal, I don't know, moods, all kinds of other good fun stuff.
Yeah. So I think it's interesting when people don't have, God, now I sound like the old man. It's interesting when people don't have the memory of the old ways. You know, that cool stuff that's been around before. And sometimes it takes, you know, four or five ways, you know, attempts to get there. Again, think back from the procedural generated Diablo to the procedural generated No Man's Sky. Maybe we're ready for this. Who knows?
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, I like the interface a lot. And I think the concept of having a device like this with you, with probably some sort of hybrid cloud solution where you've got some offline storage and compute capacity on your device that you can make use of, and then connect it with your library of other assets that are extensible to other capabilities and functionality. I'm just struggling with how revolutionary it is, number one. And then number two, would I want to have one of these in my bag or pocket in addition to the other things that I'm carrying around right now? Is it compelling enough for that?
Yeah. I struggle with that too. I mean, right now on any given day, you know, I've got a smartphone, a smartwatch, a tablet, and a laptop with me. Smartphone, smartwatch, tablet. Yeah, four or five devices depending on
that's quite a lot, isn't it?
Yeah.
And when you think about it, why couldn't your watch do many of the things that this does?
Or why couldn't my smartphone?
Or your smartphone.
Yeah.
Or your tablet.
It'll be interesting is if they add on to it and say, hey, but the really unique part is we're going to also make it a phone. So be,
I know. Why couldn't it be an IP phone too, right?
Well, absolutely. You could just run Skype on it. So It'll be interesting to see what they do with this one. I'm gonna watch it just because, like I said, it looks nice. And you and I both talked about before the show that the physical design of the case was kind of cool with the wooden aspect to it.
Yeah. That is nice, organic. You know, that feels nice.
Organic tech, which is totally different. Well, speaking of interesting history and tech and science, etc., I included a link to Neil deGrasse Tyson's site over at the Hayden Planetarium and a picture from when we got to see him a couple of weeks ago, which was a really, really cool event. He came to Durham at the Durham Performing Arts Center. I had no concept of what it was going to be. It was really a 2+ hour lecture, almost 3 hours. I guess 7:30 is when it started, and we finished up about 9:45. Mm-hmm. On science and the implications of science across history, et cetera. And he has a whole bunch of different topics that he offers groups that want him to come talk. It was tied with the planetarium at UNC. They sponsored the event. And it was just a really cool evening. I wish it was recorded because he went through so much that there are all these little vignettes and stories I didn't realize. He talked about how the investment in science and in basic research drove different societies to become the dominant societies of their age, and then looked at the different investments in science across the globe over the last 20, 30 years and how that's shifting. Very, very cool. He did make one thing that I think you and I would probably find somewhat controversial. He was really looking forward to Brazilian engineered cars compared to really? German engineering cars, based off of the shift of basic research and growth in that research going on in South America.
I know that they were investing pretty heavily in natural gas vehicles, right?
Well,
is that what he's talking about, or something different?
No, he's just talking about in general in the investment in engineering and science. But when people think of engineering, right, where do you think of? You think of German engineering. And so the point that he was making is based off of new investments that's going on over time, that may one day shift. He wasn't saying it will, but I do know, you know, many of the world's planes nowadays for short-haul planes are being built and engineered in Brazil.
Huh. So, well, yeah, I've seen that too. So very interesting.
Yeah, it's very, very
Brazilian engineering.
Yeah. So really, really interesting talk and discussion. If he comes to your area, I highly recommend. It will probably be a different talk than what we had here, but highly enjoyable.
Well, that's super. I wish I had the chance to see him with you. That's one of my favorite speakers these days, and I just love his tweets, and I love just paying attention to the things he's putting focus on. It's awesome.
Yep, and I know we're just about out of time, that you have got to cut it short. So, Michael, what are you playing?
Well, the game that has kept me occupied on my travels, which I can play offline, which makes me happy, is from the makers of Crossy Roads, which I've
talked
about once or twice before. And so their new game is called Shooty Skies. And
So let me guess. This is what was the Missile Command?
No, not at all. So the deal is you play the role of a character, or another. There's several. You can be an octopus or a cat or all kinds of things.
Well, of course.
And you're flying along, and various things come at you that you need to shoot out of the sky so that you can keep on flying as long as you possibly can. And, of course, there are power-ups, and, of course, there are bosses, and there's coins you collect, and there's prizes you can win or buy with your coins, or just by, you know, every 5, 6, whatever hours, you know, they give you another little prize to just give you that drip, 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 the important chemicals and neurochemicals to keep you playing. So I'm enjoying it. I think it's pretty darn fun. You could buy extra characters if you felt like it, but I don't. And I've finished up pretty much everything but the last storyline elements of the Star Wars game.
Yeah, you've been cranking through that game. I don't know how you have time to play it that much.
I don't. And luckily, I hit a couple of key, hey, if you spend this many crystals, we'll give you all these great benefits. And so I was like, okay. So I had plenty of crystals saved up, so I was able to get lots of benefits quickly.
That's what happened because you shot past me. It was amazing.
Yeah. I'm stuck. I'm stuck at the last element on 40, and my gear and my capabilities are not allowing me to close out the last four missions, which I'm not sure how that's going to get fixed.
Well, you know you can choose to take those missions at a lower skill level.
The last four have to be at level 40.
No. There's usually like four levels of the skill.
Yes. No. I understand that because typically I've been able to do it at either one or two.
Yeah,
right. I can never do it three or four.
And if you team up, you can do it. But I haven't figured out how to add you.
Yeah. No. Well, we'll have to sort that out. I've got a guild going there too.
Ah. See, I don't.
I think my guild there is called Super Secret. So don't tell anybody. Okay.
I'll look for it then. So,
what are you playing, Michael?
Right now, I'm playing with the Emotive Insight app.
That's right. So they just came out, didn't they?
Yeah. I just discovered it this week. It's. We've talked about the Emotive guys before. We've been trying to have them on the show one time. And basically, the Insight is their next-gen headset that's really designed to understand stress levels, basic brain health is the way you think of it. And over time, it will build up kind of a profile on are you more right-brained or left-brained. It allows you to say what type of activity are you performing right now, and then it'll track a bunch of different sensors on the way your brain is behaving during those sensors. There are memory games, so it can look at the patterns of your brain while you're doing things like memorizing a set of 20 words and then writing them down to see how many of them you are able to remember within 2 minutes. And things of that nature. Looks at attention. How focused are you? Or does your mind have a tendency to squirrel? Drift?
Yes.
Et cetera. I'm having a really good time playing with it. They have it now available both for iOS and Android. They had some problems with the iOS one over the summer, so it took them a while to release that version of the app. But the Android one has been out there, and we'll have links to both of those in the show notes for people who have access to the Insight headset.
Sweet. Yeah, well, I have to fire up my Insight headset and give it a shot because when I was doing the training stuff over the web interface, I have to admit it was difficult.
Yes.
So hopefully the app has tuned down it a bit and giving the tolerance just a bit better. But we'll see.
Yep.
We'll see.
Yep. You'll have to check it out. And if you would, our listeners would provide us your feedback, your thoughts. What are the types of things that you're looking at? Drop us a note. One thing that you could do to really, really help us along is to actually rate us on the iTunes store by giving a rating on the iTunes store with a comment. It raises us up in visibility for other people to find us. So don't just flag us a 5-star, which we know you want to do, but yes. Also put a comment. We'd like to get your feedback and insights over there.
Would love to see that, everybody. All right. Well, with that, I think we need to close for the day.
Have a good one.
Thanks, everybody. See ya.
You've been listening to GamesAtWork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network, and we'd like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at GamesAtWork_biz or at our website at GamesAtWork.biz.